Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Today, we're plunging into ancient Rome's golden era, where Marcus Tullius Cicero was more than a historical character. He was the voice of an age. Cicero wasn't about the glitz of gladiators or military leadership. Instead, he embodied the might of words, climbing the ranks of the Republic with his eloquent strategy and keen political instincts. We're revisiting one of Cicero's legendary defences, revamped for the modern ear, yet retaining its classic essence. In the spotlight is Marcus Caelius Rufus, a young and controversial figure accused of political violence and attempted murder. He allegedly tried to poison his ex-lover Clodia, an influential noblewoman, and was said to be involved in stirring up public unrest through bribery and violence. With his reputation on the line and facing severe consequences, Caelius turned to Cicero, Rome's most celebrated orator, to defend him in this high-stakes legal battle. If you're as intrigued by these tales of ancient intrigue as we are, consider showing your support by joining our community on Patreon. Your support will be our muse to unveil more such tales from the annals of history. Now let's travel back in time to a world of power plays and perilous intrigues, and let us know in the comments, do you think Caelius was truly guilty or innocent? Procaelio by Marcus Tullius Cicero. Imagine you're new in town, unfamiliar with our laws and ways. You notice that this is the only court in session while everything else is on holiday break. You'd naturally think, this must be some major case. If someone informed you that the law for this case is reserved for emergency situations, like an attack on our government, you'd understand the seriousness. However, if you then learn that all this commotion is about a talented young guy, targeted by another with a personal grudge and fueled by a notorious woman behind the scenes, you might wonder, is this really the big emergency? The accuser is probably just backing up his family, which is understandable. But maybe you folks need to check powerful women who stir up drama. And the jurors? Give them a break. They're the only ones working. Look, if you really dive into this case, you'll see that this isn't a legit complaint. It feels like someone's puppet show. I get why Atratinus is involved. He's a good kid, maybe doing it for family, or he's been pressured, or he's naive. But for the others stirring the pot, I've got no patience for them. Let's set things straight about Marcus Caelius. The opposition is trying to smear his name by using family issues against him. His dad doesn't need me to defend his reputation. Older folks here know he's solid. For those unfamiliar, just know he's a highly respected individual. The idea that being related to someone so esteemed is now a negative is pretty absurd. And regarding claims about how Caelius treated his father, look at his mum heartbroken and his dad visibly devastated. They wouldn't be here if they didn't support him. The accusers also say his hometown buddies didn't like him. But the truth? Even after he moved, his hometown honoured him big time. They put him in a top position, something many wanted but couldn't get. Plus, they've sent their best to vouch for him today. Looking at all the evidence and the people who genuinely care about him, it'd be a shame if you judged this young man because of baseless accusations. If I may share something personal, my background isn't much different from the one we're discussing, and the respect from those closest to me has given me a real boost in my career. Now onto the so-called immorality accusations. The other side is full of whispers and rumours, but pretty light on actual facts. But let's be honest. If you're a young, good-looking guy, people will talk, but courtroom accusations need solid proof, not just baseless gossip. Gossip can be nasty or clever, depending on the delivery. It surprised me that Atratinus took on this gossip role. He seemed awkward handling it, given his age and upbringing. I'd rather face off with seasoned accusers. Still, out of respect for Atratinus and our mutual ties, I'll tread lightly. But, Atratinus, a word of advice. Keep your accusations as clean as your reputation. Remember, rumours can easily turn back on you. Being young and attractive makes you an easy target too. But I'll credit your clear discomfort. You looked forced into that role and handled it as delicately as you could. Moving on, let me clear up this mess about Caelius. During his vulnerable years, his dad and I kept a close watch on him. I won't harp on my influence, but when he stepped into manhood, I took him under my wing by his dad's request. Throughout these years, Caelius was surrounded by good influence, be it through education, with his family, or under the trusted roof of Marcus Crassus. Now, the mention of Caelius being close to Catiline. Context matters. Both Catiline and I were vying for influential positions when Caelius was a young adult. Yes, Catiline, with his charm, pulled in many young men, but Caelius? He was by my side, far from Catiline's influence. Later on, sure, they had some association, but during Caelius's impressionable years, he was with me, far from Catiline's reach. Finally, Years later, after Caelius had made a name for himself, he did support Catiline in his pursuits. But how long do we baby our youth? I recall, during my own youth, being cautious and disciplined, whether it was in daily life or on the battlefield. If a young man faltered even slightly during those early stages, he'd face whispers and side glances. But if he maintained his integrity, as he grew older, his reputation would remain solid. In essence, Caelius, after already having a footprint in public life, aligned with Catiline, so did many others. Catiline was a complex figure, a mix of vice and virtue. It's hard to find someone as paradoxical as him, with conflicting ambitions and desires. Let me give you a snapshot of Catiline. He was charming to those who played by the rules, but equally tight with those who didn't. One minute he's supporting the Constitution, the next he's its biggest enemy. No one could match him in greed or generosity. The guy was like a chameleon, a friend to everyone, always there for you, even ready to cross the line if you needed. He could be serious with serious folks, relaxed with the laid-back ones, a scholar with intellectuals, and wild with party animals. With this ability to morph into anyone, it's no wonder he drew a lot of good and bad people. His drive and adaptability gave him the upper hand. Associating Caelius with Catiline, it's like throwing mud and hoping it sticks, but that would dirty too many good people. I'll admit, I was once fooled by Catiline's act. It took glaring evidence for me to see his true colours. So, if Caelius once counted him as a friend, should we keep holding that against him? On to the conspiracy. The other side hinted that because Caelius was friends with Catiline, he must have been in on some plot. But honestly, the argument falls apart. Where's the proof? The moment Caelius stepped into the public eye, he went after one of the conspirators. On that electioneering and bribery charge, do you really think Caelius would point fingers if he was guilty of the same? And yes, he may have been too eager in prosecuting, but that shows he had nothing to hide. About his debts, you claim he's reckless with money and ask for his books. Here's the thing, he's still under his dad's financial umbrella, so he doesn't keep personal accounts. The only evidence of him overspending is his rent, but even that's skewed. I hear Publius Clodius is selling properties, including where Caelius stays, and it seems the accusers might be inflating the rent to boost the sale price. And the whole moving away from his dad's thing, it was strategic. After his legal win, his dad even suggested the move. His old place was far from the city centre. He moved to Palatine Hill, and the rent was reasonable. Let's kick off with a nod to Marcus Crassus, who once said something like, "Oh, if only we never had that mess in the first place." But here we are, dealing with drama sparked by our very own Palatine Medea, and you'll see that all the drama around our guy, Caelius, started right there. But let's debunk some rumours. The prosecution says they'll bring a senator who claims Caelius got aggressive with him during an election. If this guy steps up, I'll ask, why didn't you press charges immediately? If he says he wanted to complain, not sue, then why is he only speaking up now? And if he's witty in response, I'll ask who's pulling his strings. If he's being sincere, I might feel for him. But if he's just another puppet, I'll be glad they only found one senator to play this game. Then there's the he said, she said about Caelius supposedly attacking someone's wife after dinner. If someone's ready to swear that and didn't even try to settle it privately, that's bold. The real thing to remember? The actual people accusing Caelius aren't the masterminds behind this. They're just front men, probably feeling wronged and looking for revenge. But just because they feel justified doesn't mean you should jump on their bandwagon. There are a lot of folks out there ready to testify if they see a benefit. Be smart about who you trust. Their words shouldn't sway this court. I'll lay out clear evidence, and we'll tackle each claim head-on. I'm glad Marcus Crassus has already cleared up some accusations related to that Naples mess and the property drama. I only wish he'd also touched on the Dion issue. King Ptolemy is openly admitting to that crime, and his supposed sidekick, Publius Acicius, walked free. So how does Caelius get caught in this if Acicius, clearly more involved, got off scot-free? Why is Caelius in the hot seat? Finally, let's cut through the noise and focus on the heart of the matter. You know, I watched you all closely as Lucius Herennius spoke, and I get it. He's slick with words, and he laid it on thick about wild lifestyles, partying too hard, and youthful recklessness. While he usually comes across as chill and laid back, in here he acted like he's on a moral high horse. The way he lectured Caelius was like a dad going all out on his kid. He went on and on about partying and carelessness. What caught me was how he tried to drag Caelius by bringing up some dinner with Bestia, suggesting they were best buds. The proof? Some supposed dinner guests who either aren't here or are just backing the prosecution's claims. Then he tried to make a big deal about Caelius being part of the Luperci, as if being in a club is some big scandal. But what really got to me was the extended talk about wild living. It's like he was trying to get under our skin by shaming the whole younger generation. Look, we've all heard Publius Clodius preach against the so-called sins of youth. It's always the same story, young people partying, enjoying life, and maybe even splurging on some fancy cologne or taking a trip to a hotspot like Baiae. Here's the thing. I've seen tons of young folks who've indulged in the pleasures of life, but eventually got their act together and made a positive impact. Youth has its moments of craziness, and if no major harm is done, we tend to let it slide. But now, it feels like every single youthful mistake is being pinned on Caelius. You can rant about the indulgences of today's youth, but don't dump all that frustration on just one guy. I wanted to argue that youth is a time for mistakes, but I feel like that won't fly now. Instead, I ask this. Don't let the faults of an entire generation fall on Caelius's shoulders. Don't make him the scapegoat for everyone else's choices, and if you grant me that, I'm ready to address the specific charges thrown at him. There are two main points here, the gold issue and the poison claim. Both lead back to the same person, Clodia. The accusations seem like they're just gossip, honestly. He's a player. He's a party animal. He's shady. This isn't a schoolyard argument. It's a courtroom. But when we trace back these claims, we hit Clodia. They say he got the gold from her and then planned to use poison on her. That's the heart of this case. Now, our entire focus here is on Clodia, a woman known not just for her status, but also for her, reputation, and Gnaeus Domitius, you know it too. It all revolves around her. If she doesn't claim she lent him gold, or accuse him of planning to poison her, then it's pretty low of me to drag a woman's name through the mud. But if she's the core of their argument against Caelius, I've got no choice but to address it. And honestly, when dealing with her, I'll be tactful and respectful, especially considering her well-known escapades. So, what should we ask Clodia? Do we go old school and grill her with all the intensity of our grandparents, or do we keep it light? If we went old school, I'd imagine calling up one of her ancestors, someone who'd give her a serious reality check. Maybe her famous forefather, blind Appius Claudius. He'd be like, seriously? Getting involved with a young guy like Caelius? And now there's drama about gold and poison. Have you forgotten our family legacy? Think about our reputation. I might have been a bit too theatrical bringing in her ancestor, but come on. If we're laying it all out, Clodia's got some explaining to do. She's been in the spotlight for parties, beach trips, lavish dinners, musical nights, basically living the high life. And the prosecution is happily using these stories with what seems like her green light. But now, since she's allowing all this to be aired out in public, she better either debunk the tales or admit her credibility's shot. So, what's it going to be, Clodia? Are you going to give us the real story or just keep up the drama? Look, Clodia, let's try a different approach. If you prefer a gentler tone, I can accommodate. Instead of that old-fashioned relative, let's imagine a conversation with your modern, more understanding brother. After all, you two were close growing up, weren't you? He might say, sis, why all the fuss? You like the good-looking guy next door, tall, youthful, those captivating eyes. It's clear you wanted to see more of him. With your wealth, you thought maybe you could get his attention, especially since he's still living off his dad. But he wasn't buying what you were selling. You've got so many options, Clodia, especially with that great property on the Tiber, where everyone loves to hang out. Why fixate on the one guy who's not reciprocating? Now, Caelius, it's your turn. I'm trying to give you some parental guidance here, but I'm torn on the approach. Should I channel the super strict dad energy? The ones from classic dramas like, now my patience is truly tested. Or maybe, you're really trying my limits. These are the dads who would say things like, why always these mistakes? Why all the mess? Your actions have put us under such stress. This kind of dad would be all, why did you choose to live in such a controversial area and then get involved with someone else's wife? If you find yourself in a tough spot now, you're on your own. But maybe Caelius would counter, asserting it wasn't about money or gifts. After all, he wasn't spending recklessly or deeply in debt. And about the rumours, he might add, in a city like this, who isn't the talk of the town? If her own brother wasn't immune to gossip, how could the guy next door be? Or perhaps I should play the role of the understanding dad, the one who'd say, oh, he broke a door, we can replace it. His clothes are torn, it happens. Imagine Caelius having a conversation about his life choices. He'd probably have a field day defending himself. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone in particular, but if there was a woman out there, and we're not talking about the same lady from before, who's easygoing, always seen with a new guy on her arm, and openly invites anyone and everyone into her home and even finances the lifestyles of young men, would you really call out a guy for not treating her with utmost respect? Someone might ask, is this the guidance you gave him? Is this how you mentor the young? Did his father send him to you so he could get lost in love and pleasures and then have you defend his actions? Let me clarify. If there ever was someone so focused and disciplined that they ignored every temptation, constantly pushed themselves to the limit, and only ever aimed for honor and integrity, that individual would be exceptional. Think of legends from the past, individuals like our historical heroes who achieved greatness with so little. But finding someone like that today, it's like searching for a needle in a haystack. Even the ancient values seem to be fading. And it's not just here. Even the scholarly Greeks, who once at least preached nobility, have altered their values with changing times. Some argue that personal pleasure should be the ultimate goal, a controversial concept that even well-read individuals have flirted with. Others believe in mixing both honor and pleasure, which is like trying to mix oil and water. The few who preach hard work and sacrifice often find themselves talking to empty rooms. Life itself is tempting, and the lure of pleasure can be hard to resist. So when some people falter, especially when even the experienced have stumbled, can we truly blame the young? So if there's someone who can resist the allure and stay committed to their values, I and a handful might call them blessed, but most would probably label them as dull or too serious. Right now it feels like the straight and narrow path is overgrown, hardly anyone's walking it. Maybe we need to cut young people some slack, allow them a little room to mess up and have fun. We can't expect them to be perfect all the time, as long as they don't go too far off track. So sure, let them have their wild nights and youthful follies, just as long as they aren't breaking homes, wasting their entire inheritance, drowning in debt, or causing real harm. After they've had their fun, and maybe made some not-so-great decisions, they'll grow up, focus on their responsibilities, and learn from their experiences. Think about it, we've seen plenty of accomplished people, and our parents can recall even more, who lived a little too passionately in their younger days, only to turn out pretty awesome in the end. I won't drop names, but I'm sure a few come to mind. Why drag someone's reputation just to highlight a small misstep from their past? Many great figures had their wild phases, but they're remembered more for their later achievements and the simple understanding that, hey, they were young once. But here's the twist. Marcus Caelius isn't like that typical young rebel. I've known him well, and he's always been different. He's not the guy wasting money at wild parties, racking up debt, or constantly chasing the nightlife. He's more mature, more driven. You've heard him speak, both in defense and prosecution. The guy's talented. And it's not just raw talent. It's clear he's put in the time, effort, and late-night study sessions to master his craft. Now, think about it logically. The accusations against Caelius and his evident skills, they don't add up. A mind obsessed with lust and distractions wouldn't be able to reach his level of public speaking. If hedonism was all he cared about, he wouldn't put himself out there every day, facing challenges and enemies, and taking huge risks with everything to lose. Why do you think so few people excel in public speaking, even with all the rewards it brings? It requires sacrifice, giving up leisure, fun times, even socializing with friends. It's hard work that deters many, not necessarily their lack of skill. Ask yourself, if Caelius was so addicted to pleasure, would he be dragging powerful people to court while he's still so young? Would he be battling it out daily in the legal arena, making foes and risking it all for a shot at glory or downfall? You might be thinking, there's something fishy about him hanging around that neighborhood and those bye trips. Well, let's address the elephant in the room. There's a certain woman whose actions scream scandal every time she steps out. If you're judging guys for hanging out with her, well, that'd be saintly of you. But let's face it, young men visiting party girls is as old as time. When was this ever really a big deal? Without naming names, imagine a woman living like a bachelorette, hosting wild parties, constantly surrounded by strangers. Her every action, from her looks to her flirty banter, paints her as someone just looking for a good time. So, if a guy hangs out with her, would you call him a player, or just someone enjoying company? Is he taking advantage of her, or just joining in the fun? Clodia, this isn't personal. But since you're being paraded around as the star witness, let's have a chat. If there was a woman like I described, and it's not you, would it be a big deal if a young guy hung out with her? If it's not you, then what's the problem with Caelius? If it is you, then why is this even a scandal when you seem to embrace the lifestyle? Stand up and clarify. Either admit Caelius did nothing wrong or own your reputation, giving him and others a way to defend themselves. I feel like we've navigated through the stormiest part of this debate. The main accusations are heavy. Caelius supposedly borrowed money from Clodia and then tried to poison her. They claim he needed the money to bribe some guys to murder a diplomat staying with a certain Lucius Lucius. That's a massive allegation. But I have a question. Clodia, did Caelius tell you why he needed the money? If he didn't, why'd you lend it? If he did, you're just as guilty. Were you okay with funding a potential murder? Were you complicit in such a plot? Either Caelius trusted you enough to spill the beans about his plan, making you an accomplice, or he didn't and probably never borrowed money. So, Clodia, it's decision time. Either you knowingly funded a crime, or you never handed over any cash in the first place. So, are we really supposed to believe this? Do we need a laundry list of reasons to doubt such an outrageous accusation against Marcus Caelius? Would a smart guy like Caelius really trust some stranger's shady slaves with such a risky task? And if you want me to play detective, just like every other lawyer might, I've got some questions. When and where did Caelius meet these slaves? Who introduced them? Did he really plan all this by himself? Look, I could break it down step by step, corner every suspicion, but I won't find a reason, a gap in his whereabouts, a chance, a partner in crime, or even a hint that points to him. But let's not get lost in lawyer jargon. Instead, I present to you Lucius Luceius, a top-tier witness. He's a man of honour. If he believed for a second that Caelius was trying to harm him or his guest, he would have spoken up. A well-educated man like Luceius wouldn't turn a blind eye to a threat under his own roof, especially against a respected guest. But let's cut to the chase. Listen to Luceius's statement, given under oath. Now, just a quick heads up before we delve back into Cicero's words. The exact content of Lucius Luceius's deposition isn't available in historical records. What we do have, though, are Cicero's references and responses to it in his speech, which give us a sense of how Luceius's testimony fit into the defense strategy. Gentlemen of the jury, you've got to decide if you believe him or not. Was this entire accusation just a fabrication from a vengeful woman, or did a respectable man like Luceius lie for no reason? Now let's talk about the alleged poisoning. Why would Caelius want to poison this woman? Was it over some unpaid gold? She didn't hound him for repayment. Or was it to silence her? But she never accused him of anything, did she? And let's not forget, this trial wouldn't even be happening if Caelius hadn't decided to put someone else on trial first. So, where's the motive? Oh, I see. They've cooked up this story about Dion just to say Caelius had a reason to poison Clodia. But who supposedly helped him? Her own slaves? Do you really think Caelius would be naive enough to trust his fate to someone else's slaves, especially knowing they had the close relationship with their mistress? Then there's the actual poison story. Where did it come from? Who delivered it? They claim Caelius tested it on a slave who died instantly. Really? If he did such a terrible act, why hasn't he faced the consequences yet? This isn't just a simple party scandal we're talking about. We're discussing unimaginable actions and vices. In such a chaotic environment, slaves would naturally be in on the secrets, wouldn't they? Would Caelius really not know that if he was so close with the woman? I was there when Quintus Metellus passed away. A true patriot, he believed in serving his country. Just days before his death, he was active, attending Senate meetings, and seemed healthy. But then he was gone, leaving a void. I remember his last moments. Even as his mind wavered, he spoke of the nation's impending troubles and repeatedly called out for Quintus Catulus and myself. His main regret wasn't his own death, but the inability to protect the country and me. This was a man who once publicly vowed to stop Clodius himself. So, when this woman emerges from the very house where such a tragedy occurred and throws around accusations, it baffles me. It's painful to even think of Metellus, making it hard for me to continue. But let's return to the accusations. Now, the source of the supposed poison remains unclear. The story goes that it was given to Publius Licinius, a friend of Caelius. The handover was planned at the Senian Baths, but why there? Why not at Caelius's house? If he and Clodia were still close, a visit from her servant wouldn't raise eyebrows. If they were estranged, then maybe there's reason for the alleged deceit. My opponent argues that Clodia set a trap at the baths, with her friends ready to catch Licinius red-handed. Honestly, the narrative feels thin. A public bathhouse is the chosen spot for a stakeout? Not the best location for people to stay unnoticed. And these witnesses hiding there, why haven't we heard their names or testimonies? But let's say they were indeed there. According to the tale, they jumped out just as the handover was about to happen. But Licinius, sensing danger, pulled back and fled. It's evident that truth has its way of shining through the most intricate of plots. Let's break down this theatrical scene we've been presented with. The whole plot seems faulty. I mean, how did Licinius manage to escape from so many people supposedly waiting to catch him? It doesn't make sense. Whether he handed over the poison or not, wasn't the plan to catch him in the act? If they had waited any longer, Licinius could simply deny ever having the poison. Their best moment was when he showed up, poison in hand. The way this story is presented feels more like a slapstick comedy than a serious narrative. It's as if when the writer didn't know how to progress the plot, they just added a chase scene. Classic distraction technique. So picture this. Licinius panics, tries to escape, and still, with all these men supposedly on him, he gets away. Why didn't they just capture him and seal the deal right there with witnesses? Were they scared they couldn't handle one young man? The whole story lacks concrete evidence, motives, or any logical direction. Their entire case hinges on the credibility of their so-called witnesses because we don't have any actual proof or clues pointing to the truth. I'm eager to meet these witnesses, not because I'm afraid, but because I'm genuinely curious. I'm picturing the friends of this influential woman fresh from their baths. And then there's the supposedly brave men she positioned strategically at the baths. I'm curious about their hiding spots. Were they all cramped under a tub or hiding in some prop? I'll press them on why, with their numbers and apparent advantage, they couldn't capture or chase down Licinius. They might be smooth talkers at dinner parties, but a court trial is a different game. Charms that work under dimmed lights don't always shine brightly in the clarity of day. If they show up, I'm ready to counter their stories. But I'd advise them, be the life of the party. Woo the influential woman, outdo others in luxury, be her closest ally, let her dominate you. But please, don't destroy an innocent man. Let's decode this drama. So she frees the slaves we've been discussing based on her influential family's advice. Finally, she listens to her family. I'd love to understand the motive behind this. Was she setting up Caelius? Or shielding the slaves from interrogation? Or perhaps rewarding them for staying hush about her many escapades? She claims it was because her family told her to. Well, of course they did, if you presented it as if you were the only one aware of the whole situation. And that salacious rumour going around, was it linked to the supposed box of poison? It's hard to tell with a woman like her. Though everyone's chatting about it, Caelius had nothing to do with it. Likely, some young joker is behind it. The story might be inappropriate, but has a grain of truth, doesn't it? Now, jurors, here's the crux. This trial revolves around an accusation of severe assault under a law that was crucial during a political crisis, a law meant to protect citizens and the state, which was instrumental after a major conspiracy, was squashed during my term. And now this law is being manipulated to target Caelius, not for national safety, but to appease a woman's desires. They even have the nerve to bring up the convictions of Marcus Comertius and Gaius Caesarius as relevant examples. Really? Using those names in her defence, refreshing memories of past controversies that we've tried to move past from. Their conviction was tied to avenging something for her. They might not have technically violated the assault law, but they weren't innocent either. And why drag Caelius into this mess? Nothing he's accused of is relevant here or worthy of your criticism. His younger years were all about preparing for a career in public service, inspired by role models. He even served in Africa with the respected Quintus Pompeius and received his endorsement. As a young, aspiring individual, he followed in the footsteps of the greats, trying to make a name by challenging influential figures. Caelius had a thirst for recognition. Sure, I wish he'd channeled it differently, especially considering our past disagreements. He notably called out Gaius Antonius, my fellow consul. Antonius had his own issues balancing past achievements and rumours of misconduct. After that episode, Caelius was a star. Whether in legal matters or aiding pals, he was top of his game and incredibly well-liked. But let's be real. The guy hit a rough patch. You know how it goes. He met a woman, moved to a shady neighbourhood, and dabbled in some questionable indulgences. When someone bottles up desires during their younger years, it can all explode later. But here's the twist. Whatever stories you've heard, he got himself out of that mess. He's not even on talking terms with that woman anymore. Instead, he's now defending against her hostility. To silence the chatter about his wild phase, he took legal action against one of my buddies for election fraud. Even though I was against it and tried to dissuade him, he persisted. The guy even demanded a second trial when the first didn't go his way. Honestly, he doesn't listen to advice and can be a bit too fiery. But it's not about wisdom, which at his age might be a stretch. It's about his ambition and drive. In our prime, we should be curbing such tendencies. But in youth, it indicates a future filled with accomplishments. Youthful exuberance often needs a check, not a boost. So if he gets a little too heated or seems too aggressive, or if his flashy style irritates you, the extravagant outfits, the entourage, his overall flamboyance, remember that these things fade. Time has a way of tempering the extremes. Please, gentlemen, don't take away a valuable citizen from our community. Trust me when I say that he's genuinely committed to our shared goals. If I've ever done anything noteworthy, believe that this young man will tread the same path. It's not just about our friendship. His actions already speak for themselves. Nobody who challenges an ex-official for misconduct can ever betray the state. Having not accepted the decision when accusing someone of election fraud means he can't manipulate future elections himself. Caelius has already taken significant steps twice to ensure accountability. You can see these as proof of his commitment or security against future misconduct. Recently, Sextus Clodius was set free. Even though he's been stirring trouble for ages, he's got a history of destruction and violence, but thanks to a woman's intervention, he walked away untouched. After such an event, are we going to let the same woman's desires destroy Caelius? Should we believe she can save the worst and ruin the best at her whim? Reflect on Caelius's youth and the anguish of his elderly father, who sees his son as his world. He pleads with you, trusting in your sense of justice. Think about your families, your connections, and empathize with them. The elder Caelius is on the edge. The weight of this could push him over. Do you want to see a budding young life cut short? Denying a father his son and vice versa is a tragedy. Show compassion. And this hopeful young man, anticipating your support, do you wish to destroy him? Return him to his family, to us, and to our society. In doing so, you guarantee his dedication to serve you, your families, and our shared future. The rewards from his contributions will be enjoyed by all of us. And there you have it, the stirring words of Cicero in defense of Caelius. Thanks to Cicero's eloquence and strategy, Caelius was acquitted, proving yet again the timeless and resonant power of well-crafted rhetoric in the heart of ancient Rome, as well as anywhere else. As we wrap up our journey back in time, we hope you've been inspired and captivated by the intrigue, drama, and the pivotal moments that shaped the course of not just one young man's life, but history itself. If today's dive into the annals of Rome sparked your curiosity and you're eager for more tales from the tapestry of our shared past, remember, this is just one chapter of this channel. There are countless more stories waiting in the wings, ready to be told and relived. Consider joining our dedicated community of history enthusiasts on Patreon. The link is right down there in the description. With your invaluable support, we can keep turning the pages of history, unearthing and presenting tales of yore for a modern audience. Thank you for being a vital part of this adventure, for embracing the power of storytelling with us. Feel free to share your thoughts and reflections in the comments, as each perspective adds a unique layer to our historical tapestry. Until we meet again in our next historical escapade, keep the flame of curiosity burning bright and let the echoes of the past resonate in the stories of today.